Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Transform your home in one weekend and save big money at Menards. Protect and enjoy your outdoor living space with Thompson's semi-transparent wood sealer. It maintains wood's natural color and provides durable year-round protection from water and sun damage in just one coat. Save big money on Thompson's water seal products. Our knowledgeable team is ready to help bring your dreams to life 1 gallon at a time. Stop by your local Menards today.
Save big money at Menards.
Hour number three, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Blake Topmeyer, SEC columnist for the USA Today Network. Blake, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on with us. Blake, what do you make of the idea being thrown out there about the SEC moving to a 9-game schedule, and how challenging do you think it could be if they go the 3-6 route to come up with the three permanent opponents that make everybody happy?
Well, you won't make everybody happy, but I think you can make more people happy under that format than you can under the 1-7 format discussed, where you only keep one annual rival for each team. I think you'd lose so many of those secondary rivalries. Games like Georgia-Auburn would not be played every year, because under that 1-7 format, you'd have to preserve the Iron Bowl. You'd have to preserve Georgia-Florida. And so, you know, the Georgia-Auburn game would go to be playing every other year. And those are the types of rivalries you're going to lose, at least on an annual basis, if they go with the 1-7. The 3-6, you can preserve those secondary rivalries, which in many cases, the secondary rivalries are about as big as the main rivalries. And it's interesting, you know, kind of taking the temperature around the conference as far as who's for the 9-game, who's for the 8-game. And, you know, it's many of the schools we see standing up for the 9-game schedule are more your power football programs, you would say. I mean, we've heard Alabama stand up for the 9-game schedule. I mean, Nick Saban's been talking about a 9-game SEC schedule for a decade now. Florida has said very prominently that they want the 9-game schedule, Texas A&M. So those are the type of schools you hear talking for the 9-game. The ones that are more in favor of the 8-game are Kentucky, Ole Miss, South Carolina. You know, those schools that you typically think of maybe more in the second half of the conference. And so I think there's some thought that if we add a 9th conference game, what does this do for our program? What does this do for our record? But the thing of it is, the SEC has said, at least preliminarily, if they go with the 9-game conference schedule, you don't have to play a Power 5 non-conference game. So theoretically, you know, if you chose to do that, your schedule doesn't have to get that much more difficult. You could swap in an extra conference game in favor of a Power 5 non-conference game. And so, all told, you'd still be playing the same number of Power 5 teams if you wanted to. So, overall, what's going to win out? I tend to think it's probably going to be what the Alabamas of the world want and not the Kentuckys of the world want.
Yeah, and your last point is my one real hesitation, Blake, because I love actual good non-league competition and games that we look forward to watching, and I would hope that it wouldn't create a bunch of teams that are just now trying to just schedule 3 wins because they're having to play the nine SEC games. But I suppose that probably breaks along the power lines too, right? Like maybe, hopefully, at least the top of the league continues to play at least one good game, but maybe some of the others wouldn't.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, the teams I mentioned there, like the Alabamas and Floridas of the world that are in favor of that nine-game SEC schedule, I think they would continue to play at least one Power 5 non-conference opponent. And in fact, Scott Strickland, Florida's athletic director, said, yeah, absolutely, they're going to keep playing that Florida State game at a minimum every year. And he said, we might play more Power 5 non-conference games. And I think Alabama would. I think, yeah, those teams that feel like they're going to be college football playoff contenders, I don't think they're going to shy away from that. And the interesting thing is, I guess I'm in favor of the nine-game conference schedule because I think, more conference games, it's what fans want, it's what players want, it's what us in the media like, right? Like, the only people who don't really want nine conference games, more conference games, are those struggling coaches that are trying to keep their job and want to get to six wins and maybe, you know, the Birmingham Bowl. And, well, is that really going to save your job? Probably not for long anyway. But, yes, losing those good non-conference games is the one concern. But I think you might have a few schools dump them, but I think for the most part, most schools would still keep that.
Blake Topmeyer on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Blake, looking ahead to this season, are there some dark horse teams in the SEC that maybe stand out to you? And one in particular that I want to ask you about that we've talked about this week on the show, Shane Beamer and South Carolina with Spencer Rattler coming in at quarterback. What type of a year do you think they can have?
Yeah, Spencer Rattler totally changes what that program is capable of here in Beamer's second season. Like, you know, if without him, we'd be thinking, you know, we'd be talking about South Carolina maybe as in a 6-6, 7-6, you know, with a bowl game type team like they were in year one under Beamer. With Rattler on board, I mean, this is a fringe top 25 team, possibly. I mean, that was the missing piece last year. You know, you think about it, South Carolina started four different starting quarterbacks throughout the season. They opened the year with a former graduate assistant, Zeb Nolan, taking off the whistle and putting on the uniform and starting the season as their quarterback. They finished the season in the bowl game starting Dakarian Joyner, who's a wide receiver, at quarterback. So, you know, they really had to do anything and everything to get through last season at that position, and now they got a guy who this time a year ago was a preseason Heisman front runner. And, you know, I know it didn't go that well there at the end, in particular for Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma, but you look at it and starting quarterback record is maybe one of the most overrated stats in the sport, because a lot of things go into whether you're winning games or not. And sometimes, you know, mediocre quarterbacks can get credit for a good team, but still, at the end of the day, Spencer Rattler started 17 games at Oklahoma. The Sooners won 15 of those games. And beyond that, I mean, you look at what he did. You know, by and large, he was pretty good at Oklahoma. There were some games where he wasn't, and toward the end it had started to fizzle. But I think he could really get a nice reboot at South Carolina. And I look to the SEC West, I think Arkansas is a team that is still flying below the radar, you know, even after a 9-win season last year. I think KJ Jefferson, their quarterback, is among the most underrated quarterbacks in college football. I mean, the guy was fantastic last year. I know I know Arkansas is adjusting to the loss of Treylon Burks, and that is certainly going to be a ding to their offense. However, they brought in Jaden Hazelwood, you know, really good wide receiver from Oklahoma. They got a good backfield. Jefferson can run it in addition to pass it. I think Arkansas, once again, is sort of a team that could be positioned for 9-plus wins. And it's not in the Alabama tier, But when you think about who's that next tier of teams in the SEC West, I mean, Texas A&M's getting all the love. Well, we don't even know who Texas A&M's quarterback is going to be. I mean, we know who Arkansas's quarterback is going to be, and he's pretty dang good. I think of Arkansas sort of in a similar light as I do to Texas A&M being right there in that second tier of the SEC West. But you don't hear Arkansas talked about in the same way as you do the Aggies, despite the fact that Arkansas beat Texas A&M last year.
So, Blake, big picture, the name, image, likeness discussion, which I think does get tiresome, and nobody knows exactly where it's going. But I just want to know, 5 years from now, you know what it looks like now, what will it look like? Do you think that they're actually going to be able to get it under control at all? And beyond that, we've talked some about the highly paid incoming player, to a roster and a coach, knowing, and everybody, really knowing in some cases that that's the case. How does that impact a coach's personnel decisions, starting decisions, and things like that?
Yeah, I don't know that they're really going to get it under control. I don't know that they can. I'm not a legal expert, but I think there's a limited number of things they can do without ending up in court if they're trying to limit the earning value of athletes. That's sort of how we got here in the first place, was, the Supreme Court pushed this along in that 9-0 opinion last summer. So I think there's not much they can do. I think they're starting to realize this. I mean, at Destin, at the spring meetings, you did finally hear, despite all the complaining in the off season from coaches, you did finally hear some acknowledgement of, like, well, this is the way of the world now, whether we like it or not, in that ranks. And the interesting thing to me to see is going to be sort of what you were touching on there, is like, is it still money flying around for recruits, for high school kids to sweeten the pot, or are you going to need a lot of that NIL money to keep the talent that you have in your program? And I was talking to Lane Kiffin recently, and he made a point that he's made before of, if you're a good player on a college roster, what is to keep you from entering the transfer portal at the end of your season, even if you have no real intention of transferring, just to drive up the value,
get the bidding,
to drive up the NIL deal. He said, you'd be foolish if you didn't do that. And he said, in the NFL, if guys could be unrestricted free agents every year, they'd do that, right? They'd drive up the value for themselves. And that is, that is the one area that I think a lot of coaches probably have the biggest issue with. Is, I think on the surface, on a lot of levels, they don't mind the players being able to earn money. I think a lot of coaches understand the immediate eligibility for transfers, particularly because coaches can and do change jobs all the time. I think what is most worrisome to them, really when you get down to it, is the idea that they have to re-recruit their own players, that they could lose their own players just because they want to get a better deal. However, this is the system college sports has chosen. Because the alternative to this is schools paying the athletes, a collective bargaining agreement, employment contracts. Like, that's the alternative to all this, which colleges and the NCAA, I mean, they didn't want that. They wanted to hand off the bill to paying athletes to third parties and boosters and companies and rich people. When you hand it off to somebody else and let them take care of it, then you can't, on the other side, say, whoa, 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 guys, let's put up some guardrails here. And yeah, we want these third party dollars for athletes, but you can't get involved in recruiting. Doesn't work that way. At least not in practice. And we're seeing that. You hand the power to them and put the responsibility on them to take care of your athletes when it comes to paying them. Well, then you've kind of lost control of some of this. So, that's sort of the great irony here of all these coaches and administrators complaining about the wild, wild west and how we've lost control of NIL. It's like, hey, this is the system you chose because you wanted that to the alternative of paying athletes and designating them as employees, which, you know, there'd be some pitfalls to that model too. But if you wanted to keep athletes under your roof, the way to do that is to have a collective bargaining agreement and have some sort of contractual system where they're getting paid, right? That's the alternative, and they haven't gone for that, so this is the world you find yourself in.
Blake Topmeyer, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Blake, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Blake Topmeyer from the USA Today Network, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll react to Blake coming up next. You can step up to the tee and take a swing at betting the PGA Tour on FanDuel Sportsbook. Right now, new customers can bet the tour with a no-sweat first bet. If you don't win, you'll get up to $1,000 back in free bets. I really like Scottie Scheffler. He's playing really well so far this year. Rory McIlroy with that smooth swing, he's been pretty consistent as well. But you take it any way you want to take it. Just make sure you do it on FanDuel Sportsbook, America's number one sportsbook. They've got great promotions every day. The app is safe and secure, and you get paid quickly as well. So download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up using promo code ROB to get started with your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. FanDuel Sportsbook, an official betting operator of the PGA Tour. Once again, that promo code is ROB. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Today, 102.5 The Game will be out at Nissan Stadium in the South Plaza from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. as Monster Jam is set to announce something big. Also, Monster Jam has partnered with Second Harvest Food Bank and is hosting a community food drive to support Nashville families facing hunger. For every 5 non-perishable items donated, fans will receive 1 complimentary ticket to this Saturday's Monster Jam event coming up at Nissan Stadium. Tickets available for the first 250 donations on site while supplies last. A limit of 4 complimentary vouchers per family/household. For more information, visit monsterjam.com. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Blake Topmeyer from the USA Today Network for joining us in the last segment. What do you make of the two dark horse teams he threw out there, South Carolina and Arkansas on the SEC West side of things? Sam Pittman.
I bought South Carolina. I bought them. I bought that stock. Yeah, I mean, Rattler, I mean, someone on the text line responded to that saying, you know, Rattler's a bust and a head case. He'll get exposed even more in this league. We'll see. Sometimes the change of scenery does matter. I think he has talent. Obviously, a lot of things went poorly, you know, for him at Oklahoma. It's, if you're South Carolina, you certainly would love the opportunity to take a chance on something like that, you know. And if he can, if he's rejuvenated, and they can kind of unlock his talent, that could be really interesting. And I think that's a great point by Blake on Arkansas, and relate it to Texas A&M. Loaded roster, 5 stars all over the place, but I agree that KJ Jefferson doesn't get talked about enough. I think in the SEC, beyond the SEC, but even in the SEC. And, man, Sam Pittman has been nothing but impressive so far. I don't know if it's just going to continue to go that way. Obviously, when you take over a brutal situation and immediately become decent. I mean, his first game was that Georgia game, right? I think so.
Yeah.
With the little fella coming off the bench and all of a sudden showing that he can play some quarterback. It's been pretty dramatic for Sam Pittman so far. Kind of a great argument against people who think you have to be a coordinator to be a head coach. Sometimes you just have the head coach sort of ingredients
vibe
in you. Yeah, there you go. The vibe, the fibers. And so I do like Arkansas. I'm really interested to see where they go from here.
I am too. Like I feel like, first off, I mean, everybody's talking about Texas A&M. And right now talking about Texas A&M against Alabama because it's Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, so I get all that. Like, Arkansas is interesting to me. Brian Kelly in year one at LSU is interesting to me. Like, that to me, like relating this whole thing back to Tennessee, you start looking at Tennessee's schedule. Like, the LSU game to me is a big one where, like, if you could win that if you're Tennessee,
all of a sudden you could be sitting pretty. But, like, I have no clue what to expect out of LSU and Brian Kelly's first year. Like, I think the coaching will be better down there, and there's always talent down there. So they could be pretty good to start. I don't know. I don't really know what to expect from Brian Kelly's coaching family down there in year one.
Yeah, I don't know. He's going to have some good X's and O's for the Tigers.
That gumbo down there.
That's right. But I do think that the quarterback position is always a good place to look. I mean, that's why I do like Tennessee this year, and I think Arkansas. And then with LSU, I'm a little bit, I don't know. I don't know exactly what to expect at that position. But, we didn't get – that's the thing. I asked the NIL question, which I think Blake had some really interesting thoughts on that. But we didn't get to the Jeremy Pruitt analysis question because we got to play that at some point today, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what show it was on, but I mean, I've got it in our group text message somewhere.
Should we play it now? Do you have that, Michelle? Yeah. Jeremy Pruitt has become a football analyst, which is pretty exciting stuff.
Of course,
Jeremy Pruitt has tried to teach Blake Topmeyer the game of football in the past. Very kind-hearted of him.
That is true. He did attempt to do that.
Well, so Blake,
this is where the first down marker is, in case you're wondering. That will never get old.
Wonderful times.
Now, he was on the Crane and Company podcast, Jeremy Pruitt was. And
okay.
He explained why he thought Tennessee could have a breakout year this year. I'm surprised he actually said the name. He's like, he actually mentioned Tennessee by name.
Well, before, because you texted it to us, before I watched it, and I knew, like it said down there, he said something about Tennessee. I was like, did he say something like, well, you know, they have had a lot of good recruiting over the years, and, you know, they've been able to build up some talent for the new coaches to enjoy.
I think we have that audio. Here was Jeremy Pruitt yesterday on Crane and Company offering his thoughts on Tennessee.
SEC team, outside of obviously Alabama and Georgia, do you think could have a breakout year this year, whether it's a team that was in the cellar that makes a big jump or a team that's kind of in the middle of the pack that's trying to get up that next tier, maybe an A&M, somebody like that?
I think it starts at quarterback. So you start looking at the teams who have the most experience coming back at quarterback. I would start at Tennessee. With Hendon Hooker and the success that they had last year, as they grow and develop a little bit on defense, they're going to score points. You look at Kentucky, the quarterback that they have back. They're always a dangerous team. Coach Stoops has done a fantastic job building that program. They find a way to win close games. So that's two teams that kind of just jump off the table to me to start with.
Which SEC?
So Jeremy Pruitt speaking the language here on this program, Tennessee and Kentucky.
By the way, it was Jeremy Pruitt who brought in Hendon Hooker.
Yeah.
For the record, he came in right before Pruitt got asked to leave. So
I think he's my favorite now because he shut out Kentucky.
I'm just shocked he mentioned Tennessee by name.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still some unresolved issues there.
Well, look, that's true. You know, if you're Jeremy Pruitt right now, maybe is this the way he's going? Is he going the analyst route? Like, is he going to be like the new Gene Chizik on the SEC network?
God, I hope so.
I do too. I mean, it'd be amazing. Actually, he was fine there.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Work on that Zoom connection. I always find it Rex Road with the Zoom connection.
Yeah. But. Yeah, that's true. A little bit of glitching. It's always fascinating to me, like coaches who hate doing media and typically just don't. I mean, he had a good intro presser, but, you know, typically just doesn't like it, didn't like it, all that stuff. And then they go into the media space and are good. That's always amazing to me.
I miss him so much.
Yeah, man, it was special. It was. I don't think we knew what we had, you know. It happens so often in life. You just don't appreciate it till it's gone.
That is true. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Lisa Byington. We'll get her thoughts on the 50-year anniversary of Title IX and go behind the curtain a little bit to her secrets to play-by-play in the NBA as well. Does play-by-play work for the Milwaukee Bucks? All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Lisa Byington here to the program, as Joe Rex Road refers to her, play-by-play superstar.
That's right.
Lisa, how's it going?
Come on, Joe. I thought you were going to say Tom Izzo, media basketball superstar.
Well, oh, we don't need to bring all that up again.
Oh, I went there already, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. Haven't we already broken down how you took me to the rim?
I know,
out here?
And like your listeners have no context of it, so now we got to tell the story, or we just leave it hanging there. And,
oh, we can tell it again, that's for sure.
Again, Lisa played hoops and soccer at Northwestern.
A kick Rex Road's
butt. It's a compliment to you, right?
That's right.
Normally, my defense is better than that, but
I got an and one. Everyone who's listening, I got an and one on Joe Rex Road that I hang my hat on to the day. In a Tom Izzo invite for all the media to play against each other.
It was funny. Joe Izzo was talking about that in our pre-show meeting today.
That's right. Yeah, you know, Izzo is an analyst for this show, Lisa. I don't know if you knew this, but we've got
really?
Yeah. I think that might be his post retirement gig, actually. So,
you know what? I do have to say I have a huge respect for morning talent, if you will. I'll consider you guys talent, whether it's
very generous of you. Thank you.
Because, you know, when I was in college, I did an internship with the Score in Chicago, and I had to get up at like 1 a.m. or 2 a.m., you know, to make sure I was there at like 4 a.m. And it sets your body clock so off. So, especially when you're covering sports and they happen at night, I don't know how you guys do it. So, I'm going to give some props to you guys out of the gate.
Thanks, LB. That's very nice of you. I don't know how you do play-by-play.
Rex Road's secret is mead. That's right. So, Lisa, today, obviously, the 50th anniversary of Title IX. Just when you hear that, when you think about, you know, the fact that it's been 50 years and the journey that has taken place since and the journey still left to go, what comes to mind on this day, the 50th anniversary of Title IX?
My mom actually comes to mind, and I say this because I'm actually going to be involved with the Big Ten Conference today and tomorrow is celebrating the 50th anniversary in Chicago, and I'm going to be one of the speakers. And so when I was asked to speak about it, you know, I really thought I understood what my mother and even my dad as a male growing up in before 1972 when women didn't have access to sports. I really kind of felt like I understood what my mom went through. And then she gave me access. I was home one time in Michigan, and she gave me access to some of her yearbooks. And I'm going through, and I immediately go to the sports section. And they're literally, you know, she told me, you know, Lisa, I never really had any opportunities. But it really just hit me as I'm flipping through the pages, and you literally saw no girls sports in high school. You saw football, you saw boys basketball, you saw wrestling, you saw all of that. And the only pages were girls during when my mom was growing up in 1966, the only pages where girls were represented were literally there was a page that was dedicated to the homemaker of the year and, you know, a nurse's page. And nothing against being a homemaker, like staying home, taking care of the kids, cooking and cleaning. That's one of the hardest jobs to do. But my point is it was only open for girls and not boys. You know, being a nurse was only open for girls and not boys. Playing sports was only open for boys and not girls. And I think it just really hit me as I was preparing for this speech coming up this weekend, to see it in my mom's yearbook, let alone just hearing her words, really kind of registered to me what she had to go through, the doors that were opened up in 1972 to allow me to go back and now look at, like, little Lisa and all different kinds of sports uniforms and eventually, as Joe had said, playing college basketball and college soccer.
Well, and now doing play-by-play for an NBA team, Lisa, so let me ask you this, I mean, I've known you for a long time, back, you know, let's go back 20 years, if someone told you you're going to be an NBA play-by-play announcer 20 years ago, what would you have said?
Well, first I was like 2 years old, right? 20
years. 20 years. I'm much, much older than you, let's get that clear, yes.
Yeah, I probably would have told that person, no, I'm going to play in the NBA. You know, like when I was a little girl growing up, I just never, I was a little bit unusual compared to some other announcers growing up because I was so into playing sports at the time that I always, you know, my prism and my reference of thinking when I watched sports or played sports is I was going to do it for the rest of my life. But to your point, it's, you know, it's valuable to have that opportunity, right, to be able to think along those lines, to be able to watch a game and think, wow, I'm going to be that Olympian, or I'm going to be that national champion. And now to be able to project it into a profession, a sports profession, it really is the steps that we have now taken from my mom, where I can't even find a picture of her in any sort of, you know, athletic gear, to me playing college basketball, college soccer, to now making this a profession and working in the NBA. But we're still not there. You know, there's still a ton of steps to take for myself, this next generation that's coming up, to even have more stories, like, you know, we're celebrating the 75th anniversary of Title IX, to look back and say, hey, you know what, in 2022, women were still doing this. So I can't wait for the possibilities to come.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, and yeah, so we had a story actually today about Shea Ralph, the Vanderbilt coach, and she had a quote in the story in The Athletic about, you know, hopefully someday we talk about Title IX like, yeah, so long ago there was this law, you know, like it doesn't apply anymore, essentially, you know, like it back in the old days, this was something that we talked about because it was necessary. So still progress to make. But Lisa, what is it like being an NBA play-by-play announcer? How has it been? And of course, you do other play-by-play. You call the NCAA tournament. What's this past year been like for you?
You know, I say to people, it's gone really fast and really slow all at the same time. You know, in terms of just breaking down the NBA season, it's like any first job or new job, like, you know, or going to a new school for the first time. You're kind of like walking through the hallways, trying to remember names and titles and all that, let alone trying to get to know the team and travel schedule and, you know, we get to travel with the team. So I'd say that my traveling, you know, versus having to book my own travel, having to check myself into the hotel, having to track down an Uber or rental car, all that was eliminated in terms of traveling with the team. All I had to do was try to figure out, like, when the bus was leaving to the arena and, you know, to go to shoot around practice or the games. And so travel-wise, it was my life was very much simplified. In terms of just the job, I just loved it. You know, the Bucks are a wonderful organization, you know, to work for top to bottom, just welcoming, so friendly. You know, obviously with the ability to call a player like Giannis, you know, night in and night out is an absolute treasure. It's a gift. I don't take it for granted at all. You know, by the way, his movie's coming out, I think, tomorrow, Rise, on Disney Plus. I'll give Giannis a little plug there. Nice. But I don't take that for granted, you know. That obviously elevates the job to a different level, right? When you have who's already been voted as a top 75 NBA talent at 27 years old, by the way, and still has plenty of basketball ahead of him. It's just I have to pinch myself sometimes to be able to sit in one of the best seats in the house and to call a unique player like that night in and night out. It's an absolute treasure.
Lisa Byington on with us here on Robbie and Rexro. What did you make, Lisa, of the Golden State Warriors winning their fourth title in the past 8 years? Really, a different iteration this time around, but the same core of Steph, Clay, and Draymond together winning their fourth title.
Yeah, I think it's you know, I was actually, if you had to root for a team, I thought at several points during the series, I thought Boston was actually the better team. You know, I think ultimately Golden State had the best player in the series in Steph. And I think the championship pedigree eventually started to show. I actually didn't think that Golden State was going to be able to win a game six on the road like they did. And that was incredibly impressive to me. It just kind of showed to me, and you know, since this is like what a Tennessee mostly listenership, it kind of reminded me too of Memphis, right, where you've got you know, a bunch of budding stars, right, who haven't been on that stage before, who are kind of learning on the job what it takes to win. And you know, ultimately Boston just wasn't there enough. They just weren't they just didn't have enough championship moments or that championship player who could consistently step up for them to get them over the hump. And so I think Boston can be back. Sure, absolutely. They're incredibly talented, and an experience like this is so valuable for a team like that.
So, Lisa, I want to go back to play-by-play real fast, and I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, but if you were telling a young person who wants to get into play-by-play, which is it's very difficult, of course, and I know there's different routes there, but what would you say to someone who wanted to get into that?
I would first say watch as many sports as you can, because unlike the analyst role or even the sideline reporting role where, you know, sideline reporting opportunities are kind of few and far between depending on how much money or resources a network wants to invest in that role. But unlike the analyst role, as a play-by-play, you can call a lot of different sports, and you can make a living by being versatile. So I think I would start by, you know, if you turn on the TV or look at different streaming devices now, I mean, almost every single sport is available to watch, right? So I think that would be the first thing that I would do. And then when you're watching those sports, start calling it in your head, you know. Learning the terminology for all these different sports is important. I think that's number two. And then number three, have an ear for how some of the best play-by-plays work with their analysts. Because ultimately, if you want to do TV, I think TV is an analyst sport. If you want to do radio, that's obviously a play-by-play sport. You know, you don't know what's happening unless the play-by-play tells you. So figure out, is it radio? Is it TV? Where do I want to go? And then once you figure that out, listen to how the play-by-play, especially in TV, tries to make the analyst shine. You know, there are different kinds of analysts, X's and O's heavy analysts, the entertainment analysts, the Dick Vitales, if you will. And then there's the some that like to combine both analytics with entertainment. Try to figure out, you know, the personality of your analyst and how to make them shine the most.
Well, Lisa, good stuff.
That is good stuff. We really appreciate you taking time to join us today. I want you to promise in the future that every time you come on, you will keep reminding us of the and one against Rex Road. It does my heart good every time.
I feel like that's my calling in life now.
You got to come down so we can play again sometime soon. Right. You know, we get some station games,
you know,
going.
What? And I'll say this, Joe and Robbie. Maybe you guys can relate. Maybe you can. I don't know. But when you start playing, when you start thinking about playing pickup, my next immediate thought is, oh, pickup would be fun. And then my second thought is, am I going to get hurt? I need to be careful. You know?
Yes. Oh, I know.
Well, I've gotten to the point now where
you're getting older.
You typically look to see, you know, depending on where the location is, what's the nearest hospital, just in case, you know. Just throw that out.
Bring
there.
The defibrillator
sure
out.
You have, like, plenty of battery on your phone where you can call 911, you know, if necessary.
Lisa, great stuff. Thanks for taking time to join us this morning.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, guys, for having me on.
Lisa Byington, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into the Titans. Chase McCabe joining us at 9 o'clock as well. All that ahead, this is Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game. Thanks to Lisa Byington for joining us in the last segment. Now, Chase McCabe coming up at 9 o'clock as well.
Lisa Byington, man, so great. Great at play-by-play, you know, great person, but best sideline reporter that I have ever seen. And maybe there's some bias in that, but if anybody who watched the Big Ten Network, you know, between, I don't know, I mean, she probably was their lead sideline reporter for football, like 09 to, you know, for several years after that. I mean, it's an absolute masterclass in what sideline reporting should be, which is informational stuff every time, good, sharp, you know, open-ended questions. Like, it was always packed with information, which is what the sideline reporter is supposed to be. You're on the sideline, you're trying to get information for people. And if I could, you know, like if you wanted to teach a class in college, I'd just show a Byington broadcast. But as a play-by-play, I didn't know that she would go play-by-play route. She's really good. And it's awesome. I mean, I think it is a good Title IX topic that you have a woman who was an NBA team's play-by-play announcer. And this is becoming more normalized as we go, and it will continue to be.
I just love how you tried to lure her back down here to try to get revenge on the and one. That's Classic stuff by you.
I will tell you, yes, she absolutely torched me, and like the whole place was like, oh, but I did. But at one point, I did a. She tried to go for a steal, and I did like a little behind the back dribble.
No, I did.
I got a behind the back dribble and got past her. And Goran Sutton, who played for Michigan State, was like, oh, so I felt good about that.
Lisa was the MVP, Joe. You weren't, okay? Just let it go.
Did you get any like post-game feedback from Tom Izzo, our friend of the show here?
I don't remember that. But the next year, I don't think she participated, but Draymond was a freshman. I think I might have told this story. And my team crushed his team, and he was really mad and was almost about to cry about it because the players coached the teams, you know, the media slob team, and it felt very good to beat Draymond's team. So, but Byington wasn't there. I think she was all at the Big Ten Network, so she would have dominated if she was.
There you go.
There you go.
We appreciate her taking time to join us this morning on the show. So you brought this up earlier in Jared versus Joe yesterday, the Jeffrey Simmons situation. So Jared and Caroline's collective stance on this is, does it make sense for the Titans to pay him right now? Do you – if that doesn't – let's say that ends up being the route they go and the Titans get through this the rest of this offseason into camp and the season starts and there's no new contract for Jeffrey Simmons. Is that going to be a problem, do you think? Do you think Jeffrey Simmons – holds out at all? I mean, we brought this up several times. The fines that are levied now make that pretty difficult to do in today's NFL. I'm not saying it's impossible to do, but it's pretty difficult to do, especially when you're making $2.4 billion or $1 million or whatever the case will be for Jeffrey Simmons. What happens if there is no new contract for Jeffrey Simmons this offseason? How much of a storyline is that as they move forward here, do you think?
I think it is going to be a storyline. And, so Jared's point was, you know, that what you say to them is, wait one – what you say if you're John Robinson, that I think it was kind of the question. What you say for John Robinson is, wait 1 year.
Right.
And you're going to – you're really going to cash in. But, again, my thing is I'm saying I get the hesitation where you are about going into this year without security. So – if we want to talk security, we can talk security, but understand that there's a cost for that too, to go to do your deal 2 years early. That's a totally fair thing to say as a GM to me,
sure,
to an agent. And so out of if you're the Titans, why would you not want a team-friendly deal on Jeffrey Simmons? Because I think this is a pathway to that. That's my thing is
so you're saying if you start those negotiations now and you want to come up with a new deal now, that's fine if you're Jeffrey Simmons, but it's going to be more towards
The ballpark. Like, to me, there's a little bit of
we'll give you more guaranteed money, but it's not going to be approaching Aaron Donald or anything like that.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a trade-off here. You know, sure, at some point you could be out in the open market and you'd get more money than we'll pay you. Like, we all know that. Everybody knows how the market works. Well, guess what? You're under contract this year, next year. We can then start tagging you. So I understand. Again, I'm putting myself in John Robinson's shoes right now. I'm John Robinson talking.
And I did hear Jared say you should be the lead negotiator yesterday.
Yeah. Well, yes. So I, John Robinson, I understand you wanting to have a new deal and wanting to to have that security. I mean, basically you're talking about generational wealth, whatever the number is, $25 million, $30 million, $33 million, $35 million, whatever it is. I don't think it would be much more than like that, right in that range, 35. That's, okay, now you have generational wealth. You are set. If your career ends tomorrow with a devastating injury, you're set for life. So if we're going to do that 2 years earlier than we would, realistically 1 year earlier. Tons of these deals get done before the option year. We know this.
Right.
But if we're going to do that while no one else in your draft class has a deal done right now, then, you know, then let's. It's going to be more friendly to us, the deal is. I think that's a – I mean, however you say it, probably say it better than I just said it, but that to me is the thinking of – doing this deal. You end up better off in the long run. Your player's happy and secure, and you move forward. And I think that the deal, again, I've said this tons of times, I think the deal looks pretty good on the back end. If I'm Jeffrey Simmons, I don't want that riskier. I don't want to wait and think I can get a huge – but also I have to be realistic. If Jeffrey Simmons is like, I want it now,
and I want it an eyelash short of Aaron Donald, well, then now you're being unreasonable.
Right. I will say this. You've thrown out your four-year, $85 million contract, which is fine. It sounds good to me. I think the $25 million is too low.
Too low? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. I mean,
the more I've thought about it this week.
So how high would you – where would you go with it?
I'd probably be high 30s.
High 30s? Yeah. Okay. So approaching 40 with it.
Well, it's a lot.
That's a lot. Hey, I mean, if that's – again, that is really what matters. That's what he's going to get no matter what happens. If I was Jeffrey Simmons, I'd be pretty happy with that. You know? No, understanding that, yes, you know, you may have a higher market value, but you also have to understand the contractual situation that you're in, and this is where he is.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jared brought this up yesterday. Chris Jones, a few years ago, got $37 million guaranteed at signing on a four-year, $80 million contract. Like, my guess is, I mean, Simmons is definitely going to want more than that. But if you're doing the deal 2 years early, what's the compromise that you come to if you're the Titans? I don't know what the answer to that is. My guess is it's probably going to be somewhere around that number, maybe a little higher.
Yeah, but as long as there's an understanding that that's what it is, going a year earlier than convention.
Right.
2 years earlier than the contract, but a year earlier than convention, that's part of a compromise. Now you have to come a little bit your way. Or our way, I guess. I'm continuing to talk like I'm John Robinson, but so not really.
Think he's going to give you a call to help on this thing? Did you take a commission?
I think last time I'm here, we talked about Kladavian Joni.
Yeah.
Back in the day when you had to have Clowney.
The return of Joe's Clowney here on the program, yeah. Thanks to Heidi and Dixon.
Oh, by the way, Heidi, I forgot to get to your comment yesterday. She asked what Steels Dan is. Is that like Food Fighters? I don't believe you, Heidi. I think you're just making this stuff up.
I think you very well could be. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Chase McCabe in studio. NASCAR coming up this weekend at the National Super Speedway, and Chase is going to be a part of that as well. He'll tell us all about it coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This Father's Day, when you ship UPS Air at the UPS store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost. It's like the father of all shipping services. It shows up to the airport way too early, just to play it safe. It's overprotective about all the things that truly matter, and it's always prompt, especially to be with family. Make it your first choice to celebrate your dad. Ship UPS Air with our money back guarantee, exclusively at the UPS store U.S. retail locations. Visit the upsstore.com/airshipping for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.